American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson and thrilled that you have joined us this morning. We are on every Monday through Friday morning, 6 to 7 a.m., The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. There's all kinds of great information there. And sign up for my email list there as well. And there's information about Vino and Veritas, just a whole bunch of great information. So, again, that's kimmunson.com. We've got a really important show planned for you today. I'm thrilled in the third and fourth segment, we will be talking with Joanne Groff. She is the property tax administrator for the state of Colorado. And as we are seeing with Proposition CC, this whole organization, Building a Better Colorado, which they say they're a nonpartisan group, and in essence, they're big government, get more money of your group, and so it's disingenuous what they are saying. And they are working to get rid of the Gallagher Amendment, as well as the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. And so I wanted to gain an understanding of property taxes here in Colorado. And so we thought, what better way than to talk to the Colorado Property Tax Administrator? So that will be in the third and fourth segment. And if you need, well, let's jump in and just do our regular things, and then we've got all kinds of information here. But as we look at these issues, it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. The romance of this narrative of taking care of everybody, well, quite frankly, you have to take from one person to give to another. And PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, they really like the power that that gives them in taking from one person to give to another. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable and excessive taxation. We continue to see the socialization, the control by PBIs of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data. All of these things are things that, when they are properly used, they help everyday people thrive and prosper. So one would wonder, why on earth do PBIs want to control that? So I want to say thank you to producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all your good support, your good work. And thank you to each of you listeners. I love hearing from you. So you can email me, Kim at kimmunson.com. And you are treasured. You are valued. You've got a purpose today. So go out and do that. Strive for excellence. And take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. So Steve, how are you doing on this Monday morning? I know Monday's your favorite day.
You lie. Actually, a good weekend. You know, the perfect mix of productivity and leisure and, you know, the things that we need to plug into.
Well, that's great. Yeah, it's Monday. We've got a lot of work to do. And so our inspiration for today is from James Madison. As you know, he was an American statesman, lawyer, diplomat, philosopher, and founding father who served as the fourth president of the United States from 1809 to 1817. James Madison is hailed as the father of the Constitution for his pivotal role in drafting and promoting the Constitution of the United States and the United States Bill of Rights. He co-wrote the Federalist Papers, co-founded the Democrat-Republican Party, and served as the fifth United States Secretary of State from 1801 to 1809. He said, "I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." Pretty powerful, Steve.
Once again, you think of the time that those words were spoken, and you know, we have a tendency to look at our situation today and say, well, you know, this is just something that came out of nowhere, and wow, we're, you know, what a shock it is. But it it's been around.
And this is one of the reasons why there has been such an effort over the last 40 years to discredit the founding fathers. Because if you can just paint them as old white guys from a long time ago, then you don't look at the wisdom of their words. And that is why we're wanting to understand what they said, because human nature does not change. Speaking of human nature, Steve, you gave me the funnies for today. Son, Dad, I've got a part in the school play. I play a man who's been married for 25 years. The father responds, perhaps next time you'll get a speaking part.
Big sigh there. It is what it is.
You couldn't wait to find that after my joke on Friday morning.
Uh-huh.
So, but very good. Let's jump in here. Wanted to talk a little bit about on the national news. Apparently, there's some new whistleblowers that are coming forward. A surprise, surprise. And, Steve, I really think that this is all fabricated. Can you say Russia? Can you say Kavanaugh? And now we have all of the whistleblowers. We had the Steele dossier regarding the Russia hoax. And so new whistleblowers that are coming out. And remember James Comey and, let's see, John Brennan and, let's see, is it James Clapper?
Yeah, the unholy three.
Yeah. Let's hear something that, Chuck Schumer said back in July of 2018 when he was on the Rachel Maddow Show. Let's try that.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
What do you think the intelligence community would do if they were motivated?
I don't know, but I, from what I'm told, they are very upset with how he has treated them and talked about them. And we need the intelligence community. We don't know what's going on. Look at the Russian hacking. Without the intelligence community, we wouldn't have discovered it.
Steve, without the intelligence community, we would not have discovered it. That was back, we've pulled that soundbite in July of 2018. You fast forward into 2019, and there was nothing there. And that was, I think, a very unveiled threat by Chuck Schumer to Donald Trump. And here we are in October of 2019, and they have tried every which way to get rid of Donald Trump. And when Donald Trump looks into the mirror, or when he looks into the camera and says, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you, I really believe that now.
Your silence on my side of the glass. Our friend Karen Kettelein, mm-hmm. Sent out a piece of hers that says the five top reasons they hate him so badly. And maybe we should put that link out there. I don't know. She's spot on. But in terms of the threat to their power and the fact that they want to hold on to power and are absolutely desperate to hold on to power, it takes my breath away to see how much they they hate him, fine, but they hate the country.
Well, and when they hate the country, they hate everyday hardworking people. No wonder they want to have open borders. No wonder they want to have rules and regulations and higher taxes, because it takes from everyday hardworking Americans. I don't know why. I just can't understand why they don't like everyday people, although we've got a heck of a week planned for you as far as the show is concerned. And we did not get the email newsletter out yesterday because there's been so many moving parts with the new branding. So I'll let you know what we have planned this week. Tomorrow we're going to have Amy Oliver Cook. She's the executive director with the Independence Institute.
The good AOC.
The good and original AOC.
You know, I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but I thought it's hilarious. On the way in, the reference made that she had a very busy weekend, the bad AOC.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, everywhere I look on the internet, I mean, she's just lit up the internet not with anything that was intellectually smart or had anything good to say. It's just more the same old gibberish.
Well, we will be talking to the smart and freedom-loving AOC tomorrow, and that is Amy Oliver Cook, and we'll be talking about this Proposition CC and this Building Better Colorado and just how deceptive this whole organization is. And so that'll be very important. On Wednesday, Dr. Tom Kranewitter will join us to talk about the New York Times new project to divide us, and that is the 1619 Project regarding slaves coming to America. On Thursday, we're going to have school board day, and we're going to have, I think, six different candidates that are running for school board down in Colorado Springs and also in Douglas County. And then on Friday, what a show we're going to have, Professor Victor Davis Hanson, about his book, The Case for Trump. And it is going to be absolutely powerful. So we've got this great week planned for you this week. So be sure and join us every morning, 6 to 7 a.m. It's replayed 10 to 11 p.m. at night. And then the podcasts are at my website, Kim Munson. That's MONSON.com. So this whole whistleblower thing, I believe, is another complete fabrication. When we talked to Cheryl Atkison last week, she said that the rules were changed just within the last few weeks. The whistleblowers did not have to have firsthand knowledge. It could be hearsay. And you can just see this whole thing is just set up. Don't you kind of wonder who's behind all this, Steve?
Well, okay. I think maybe we've already covered that aspect of it. But the amazing thing is, okay, the first whistleblower scenario had some holes in it. So what do? They turn around and bring out another one.
Mm-hmm.
And they patch those holes up and say, maybe this one will be better than the first one.
So, yeah. And you know, the other thing about this, Steve, is I think that they realize, I mean, Donald Trump is raising all kinds of money for his reelection campaign. And I think that, you know, they have the whole cheating thing, the whole ballot harvesting, and then they're working on getting rid of the Electoral College, bringing in illegals, getting them registered to vote. There's all kinds of cheating things that are being set up here. But I think they're concerned that even that's not going to work. And so this whole impeachment, I don't think that they'll really ever get to impeachment. One other thing, though, Mitt Romney, I'm very concerned about him, that he could actually, if it did get over to the Senate, that he, in essence, might vote for impeachment. Did you see what he did this weekend?
I did. And my first thought is, what credibility does he really have? I mean, okay, he went... Oh, geez, you're going to, never mind. I'm not even going to go there. But, you know, okay, he got himself back into the Senate after his failed presidential run. But I don't know that his credibility, and besides right there in his home state, that he has, you know, a huge following. Does he really have that kind of influence?
Well, I think that the real risk could be is if, in fact, they did, vote for impeachment in the House and then that moves over to the Senate.
Yes, for the trial,
you really need to have some Republicans there that would stand with the president. I'm not sure that Mitt Romney would do that because I think that his personal animosity towards Donald Trump, and Donald Trump wasn't very nice to him. I get that. But, all these people need to put on their big boy pants.
Take one for the team, Mitt, and, the country.
Yeah. And to that point, and then we'll go to break, is when you look at what the Democrats are doing, instead of governing, instead of going to Washington, D.C. and representing the American people, we the people, they have this charade of this whole impeachment thing and nothing is getting done.
How much business of the people has, I'm just asking it in another way of saying it. How much business of the people has been done in the last 3 months?
Not very much.
I mean, summer breaks and all that kind of stuff, take that into consideration. But still, their focus, their emphasis is not on anything to do with doing the business of the country.
And I do think that we will find out that all of these allegations regarding this impeachment by these whistleblowers is that there's nothing there. And it's really concerning. And I think they're all looking to the 2020 election. They're doing everything they can, because if we get another 4 years of Donald Trump, you're going to see taxes go down. You're going to see rules and regulations be peeled back. You're going to see 40 years of progressive activists that have taken over the Democrat Party. You're going to see all that work unravel, and that's why you see what's going on in Washington right now.
If you keep your ears to the ground, the Democrats are being warned by very influential people, not necessarily headline grabbers, but still influential people, that you are playing with fire and you could really, really get burned with this. But yet they persist.
Well, you know, egos and control and power sometimes get in the way of common sense. So let's go to break. When we come back, Patty has found something really interesting regarding how much money the state of Colorado gives in corporate welfare. And so we talked about it. You'll want to stay tuned. You want to hear what we have to say.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Greenwood Village, Tina Francone with Straightforward Shooting, and Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Hey, welcome back. I am Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation. We're having conversations about important issues out there. In segments 3 and 4, we will be talking with Joanne Groff. She is the property tax administrator for the state of Colorado. And the reason that we're going to talk with her is so that we can get our brains around how property taxes work. Because once again, the PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that want to keep more of your money, take more of your money, are kind of hiding behind these two amendments, the Gallagher Amendment and the Taxpayers Bill of Rights, because they want to get rid of them, because they actually keep taxes lower for residents as well as keep a lot of transparency regarding government. And so go to my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. There is a very important piece by Patty Kurgan regarding the Colorado Office of Economic Development's policy of corporate welfare. Now, as we try to set this up, Steve, Proposition CC, which is going to be on the ballot this November, is basically asking the people of Colorado to give up their tax refunds above a very generous formula of inflation plus population. Anything above that, basically, PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, interested parties have to ask the people of Colorado if they can keep those refunds. And now what they're going to ask is that we give those refunds up forever. And you may want to give your refunds up, but I think there's something immoral about giving up our children's refunds. And so take a look at my website. And Patty has done a very important piece regarding the Colorado Office of Economic Development's policy of corporate welfare. But in doing so, she found something really interesting. It's a subsidytracker.goodjobsfirst.org. And it lists millions of dollars that is given by the state of Colorado. This is just in the enterprise zones. And so this is what we have put together for you. And we're going to probably do one of these a day. If you need a reason to vote no on Proposition CC, we have hundreds of thousands of reasons, all related to corporate welfare. If the state needs more of your money, why are tax incentives, credits, grants, etc. given to corporations? To start, according to Good Jobs First Colorado Tracker, the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade, through their Enterprise Zone program, offered parent company Next Era Energy, a utilities and power energy enterprise with market capitalization capitalization of $114 billion in 5 separate awards during the years 2011 to 17. Steve, are you ready for this? We should probably drum roll this. Do you want to guess how much the state of Colorado gave them?
I would guess low. I know I would, because this is going to be astonishing.
Okay. So give me your guess what you might think it might be.
Well, is it in the... Okay, let's hope it's in the millions. It's not in the billions with a B, is it?
No.
Okay, so...
$41 million in tax credits.
Yeah.
They were accepted by their holding companies, NextEra Energy Capital Holdings and Northern Colorado Wind Holdings, LLC. Now, my friends... Why on earth should you vote yes on Proposition CC if, in essence, the state of Colorado is giving this kind of corporate welfare to a variety of different companies? We're going to be unveiling one a day until we get to Election Day, and you will be absolutely astonished. And I tell you, it actually, I'm getting close to making my blood boil. When you take a look at the proponents of Proposition CC, you see the list of all of these different organizations that are in favor of it. You see individuals. You see past politicians or elected politicians. And many of them have their hand, they're at the trough with their hand out, wanting to take money from the state of Colorado. And so this is the danger that you have, and the founders realize this. That when, in essence, you have different rules for different people and that you have government that picks winners and losers, so they are taking money from the little guy and they're giving $41 million in tax incentives and credits to big business. And so if you need a reason to vote no on Proposition CC, there's 41 million reasons right there. Steve, any comments before I move on?
Well, okay, and I'm not pushing back here, but playing devil's advocate. Those entities that do this, they have a vested interest in causing other things to happen down line. I think our argument is, why do we need your interference? Let those things happen on their own.
Right.
Through our economic form of, the way we do business.
Okay. I'm not quite sure I understand the pushback on this. And maybe it's that I don't make myself clear, is that we're not going after the business and saying that the business is a bad business. Is that what you're trying to say to me?
Right. It's the governments who are trying to lure them and essentially pervert the normal flow of doing business.
Exactly. And... So we are not saying that we are against business in any stretch of the imagination. We want business to be able to go out and compete and provide a good product. And certainly we want to make sure that happens. The big lesson here is, if it is better for this company to, in essence, pay less in taxes, how about instead of giving them a special deal, we lower taxes across the spectrum? And then that way we have an even playing field where everybody can compete, provide a good product, and not have government picking winners and losers. But when they do that, then they, in essence, keep control and they keep their power. And that's what this is all about. So that's why it should be a no on Proposition CC. I'm going through and working on a voter guide. And interestingly enough, as I was going through and trying to find the different ballots with the different counties here in the Front Range, it's a lot more difficult than you would realize. And so I'm going to have to call the clerk and recorders at many of these counties to find out what is really on the ballot. The lack of transparency that is within our elections, I'm to the point that because it's so non-transparent, I'm going to vote no on almost everything there. Just a couple of other quick little things I wanted to mention on a national level. This is astonishing. New York City threatens up to $250,000 in fines for using terms like illegal alien or threatening to call ICE. You talk about lack of freedom of speech. I know that sometimes people say things that may hurt somebody's feelings, but to have a fine of $250,000 for something that you say goes directly against the Bill of Rights. Another one that I thought was really interesting, Fremont, California, which is where Tesla is located. The Fremont Police Department's Tesla model, the S85 showpiece, was forced to give up a chase as its battery power depleted at the worst moment when pursuing a suspect. Police Officer Hartman was driving alone in the department's only 2014 Tesla when he approached the Jacqueline Road exit on Interstate 680 southbound in Milpitas, California. He spotted a vehicle possibly connected with a crime committed in Santa Clara. The officer tried to stop the suspect, who failed to oblige, and a pursuit ensued. Just realized I'm down to 6 miles of battery on the Tesla, so I may lose it here in a sec, the officer driving the Tesla said, according to Fremont police dispatch audio obtained via Broadcastify. If someone else is able, can they maneuver into the number one spot? Hartman said over the radio. Other units took over the chase, aided by the California State Highway Patrol, but had to let go of the runaway vehicle that had taken to the middle median, where it was no longer safe to pursue him. A short time later, the fugitive car was found crashed in some bushes by Highway Patrol officers close to San Jose. At that time, the suspect remains on the loose.
I love stories like this, and I know you do too. And I kind of have to think that Jason McBride would love to comment on this.
Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, what would you like to say about this?
I'm running out of power.
I
ran out right before I came on.
Well, you know what?
Started running down.
Did you? Okay, well, you better have some coffee and charge that battery. So, hey, we missed you last week, but John Buckingham did a super job, one of your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management. It's good to have you back.
Well, thanks. I missed you guys, too, and I'm sure Buck did do a great job because he's a great guy.
He really is. So what do you see coming in this week here with the stock market?
Oh, well, you know, it's always hard to predict things, Kim. We had a rough week. You know, it's funny. Every time I'm, like, out of town where I'm not going to have access to a computer, I'm be doing stuff, it always gets killed. The market knows I'm not going to be around to take advantage of the great prices, and it always tanks.
Well,
so
you know,
next time I tell you I'm going out of town, sell short.
I'm going to short the market. That's exactly
right.
What I'm going to do. So,
right.
Well, Jason, it's really good to have you back. And people can get more information and give you guys a call over at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And I know that, you know, you're welcome to sit down and with people and do a discovery session where they are, because with all this volatility, it's important to know that you can sleep well at night. And you and Buck and your team over there at Presidential Wealth Management can help people do that.
Well, we sure can. And, Kim, I didn't mean to completely dodge your question about the markets for this week. You know, we did start to get some decent recovery last week after a couple of bad days, a good bounce on Friday. And, you know, we're holding right at support. Some of the indexes are at the 200-day moving average, which we've talked about several times. So I think that, you know, as long as we could stay above last week's lows, we haven't broken below any massively important support levels yet.
Okay, well, let's keep an eye on it. And Jason McBride, thank you so much, and it's great to have you back.
All right, Kim, have a great show.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, I'm thrilled to talk with Joanne Groff. She is the property tax administrator for the state of Colorado. Just a wealth of information. And you won't want to miss this because it's going to give you a clear understanding of how property taxes work here. So we'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated 3 times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation with Joanne Groff. Joanne is the property tax administrator for the state of Colorado, and just thrilled to have her on the line. Joanne, welcome.
Good morning, Kim.
Thank you. I got connected with you. I had Dittus Gallagher on the show, as well as another day I had former state senator Ron Stewart on, and trying to get my brain around the Gallagher Amendment in Tabor. Excuse me. And so, Joanne, one of the guys mentioned that you really would be a person to talk to about this. So I'm excited to have you on the show. So, Joanne, explain the Gallagher Amendment to our listeners, please.
So how much time do we have?
Well,
no,
we got two segments.
I'll do it really quickly. So what the Gallagher Amendment did was it set a process by which residential property in the state of Colorado would contribute about the same as it was at that time, 45% to 55% all others, into the property tax pool. But that is done over time. That ratio relationship between residential property and all other property has encouraged the residential assessment rate to drop in this state, so that now a home contributes 7.15% of its value into the assessment pool. That gives us the second lowest property tax comparative rate in the whole state. The only place that has less for residential, interestingly, is Boston.
Okay. And so 7.15% is what's used on residential regarding property tax assessment, and it's like 29% then for everything else, for commercial and all that. Right.
Yes, for most others, it's 29%. It's a little bit different for what we call extracted minerals, but the 29% is for your businesses, for your vacant land, even agriculture, although agriculture is taxed, valued on production rather than on its actual value.
Okay, and so this is, so, but overall, the ratio throughout the state of Colorado, when you, so Joanne, you take the whole value of everything in the state of Colorado, right? And and then you say we're going to keep that residential rate at 45% and commercial at 55, and that assessment rate has gone down because there's been what value created, additional value in residential in the Front Range. Is that primarily what it is?
So predominantly, you've got it on. You nailed it on the head. What happens is we do a statewide survey of all value in the state of Colorado. We do that through the assessors, and the assessors tell us what they think the value adjustment is going to be. The Constitution requires us to maintain this ratio of contribution between residential and commercial. So what's happened in the state over the last 30-some years is residential values have gone up to where they're almost 80% of the total value of the state. To maintain that 45-55 comparison, then the residential assessment rate has to drop, so that residents are contributing less into the value pool on a dollar-for-dollar basis to maintain that ratio.
Now, why hasn't the commercial rate gone down?
So the commercial rate doesn't go down because it doesn't have this mechanism. And in fact, if the commercial rate went down based on this amendment, this ratio amendment in the Gallagher rate, you know, what we all refer to as the Gallagher amendment, because of that ratio, if you were to lower the commercial rate, the residential rate would have to drop more. It is that ratio between the contribution into the valuation pool, not what the actual value creates.
Okay, so let's, I think this, I want to mention right here, because I'd asked one, either Dennis or Ron, about, you know, we're hearing that, oh my gosh, this is so unfair that commercial is being assessed at 29% and residential is at 7%. On the other hand, one of the guys said that businesses can actually go out and challenge their assessment rates. They have attorney, you know, big business can. They have attorneys. They have accountants. And so many times they are able to challenge their assessment rates successfully to lower, you know, lower that assessment rate. So even though it's 29%, they've been able to maybe bring that down. What's your comments on that, Joanne?
So, Kim, what they're looking at is their actual value, not their assessment rate. They can't change their assessment rate, but
okay.
They can challenge their value, as can residential property owners in the state of Colorado. All property owners have the opportunity to challenge the value that's been put on their property by their assessor. And they can go, there are a number of ways to do that. They start with the assessor, then they go to what's called County Board of Equalization. If they still don't like it, they can go to the Board of Assessment Appeals.
Whoops, Joanne, somehow we have a little bit of a bad connection. Steve, did we lose her? Okay, so we'll get Joanne back on the line because there's another couple of questions that I want to ask her, and one is about the business personal property tax. I had not asked her that when we were preparing for the show, and so I want to understand that as well, and then also about nonprofits, on what happens with nonprofits. Do they have to pay property tax also? And so I think that those are a couple of things. And then as we get into probably the next segment, we want to talk about the little fire districts and what is happening in rural Colorado as well. So, Joanne, we lost you there for just a minute. I hadn't asked you this question, though. The business personal property tax, is that something that falls under your office as well?
So the business personal property tax, all of this actually falls under Constitution and statute. We help enact policy. We don't make policy at the Division of Property Taxation. But yes, business personal property tax exists, and it's kind of interesting. The constitutional amendment that is often referred to as Gallagher was actually a much broader amendment than just this particular residential piece. And what came in for residential is that personal property that is not used for profit gets exempt. But if it's being used for profit, which the assumption is if it's in a business, it is, then it's taxed. And it's also taxed at 29%. The value is established through a depreciation table, but it is also taxed.
Okay, and the business personal property tax, I'm not sure that people understand that this is really difficult for little businesses. Because my understanding, Joanne, is your little business, like your pizza parlor there, they actually have to pay taxes on like their ovens and their chairs and their tables and things like that. So that's an additional tax. And I think that it's really tough on the little guys. Is that something you can comment on?
I would agree that it's difficult and that it's expensive, but it is what the current structure allows for.
So is it constitutional or could the legislature get rid of that?
The legislature could get rid of it, and it's an interesting quirk of the Labor Amendment, actually, that allows for a taxing jurisdiction to determine that they don't want to collect tax on business personal property. So the legislature could make that change, but now we're going to go back to the Gallagher Amendment. If they made the change wholesale, it would lower the residential property value, and so it would be a shift away from business personal property, but really back onto businesses.
Back onto businesses. How?
Because the residential property residential assessment rate would drop, and so the transfer back. So you've taken out of the pool the cost of the business personal property, but you still have the same amount of tax that's owed and due to the various taxing jurisdictions. So either businesses get to pay more, or taxing jurisdictions get to deal with less.
Okay.
The legislature has, I want to give them some credit, the legislature has over the last several years done some things to lower the obligation of business personal property tax. They've raised what's called the threshold so that you used to pay at a much lower threshold. Now you have to have over $7,500 worth of property before you get taxed, and they also have a tax credit on your income tax up to $25,000 of value.
Okay, so that does help the little businesses a little bit then.
Does help the little businesses a little bit, yes.
Okay, okay. Next question, nonprofits. You know, we have like big nonprofit hospitals. We have nonprofit foundations that own buildings. Do they pay property tax?
So for the most part, no. The big businesses and little businesses, charitable organizations that would qualify as religious, charitable, or nonprofit schools get to apply through us, through the Division of Property Taxation, and ask for their property to be property tax exempt. And if the property is used, is owned by the organization and used for the charitable purposes of the organization, it becomes exempt after we approve it.
And is there a list that we can find out?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can get that. We can get a list to you. There are over 11,000 parcels in the state of Colorado. They're exempt through that process. And we certainly can get you that list by county, I think.
That would be great. That would be great, Joanne. And then, you know, another thing that we've heard a lot about is that Gallagher interacting with the TABOR, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, has made it difficult on some of the little fire districts, some of rural Colorado. And I think it's important that people understand how those things interact, because that has been one of the narratives out there that, oh my gosh, if we don't get rid of Gallagher, if we don't get rid of TABOR, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, then these little towns won't have fire departments. And so we're going to unpack that. We're talking with Joanne Groff. She is the property tax administrator for the state of Colorado. This is the Kim Munson Show, and we're going to go to break. When we come back, we will continue the conversation.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
This week at the 88 Drive-In Theater, enjoy three scary movies under the stars, all for only $9. 47 Hours, Joker, and It Chapter 2. The 88 Drive-In Theater is open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Thursday, but closed Tuesday and Wednesday. Monday and Thursday, try the very popular pizza special. Plus, new on the menu, crunchy churros with hot coffee or cocoa. Follow the 88 Drive-In on Facebook or visit their website, 88drivein.net.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are having a conversation with Joanne Groff. She is the property tax administrator for the state of Colorado. And I asked Steve during the break, I said, hey, Steve, are you learning a lot? And he said, absolutely. So thank you, Joanne, so much for being with me.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, Joanne, one of the things, as we see people say that we've got to get rid of Gallagher, we've got to get rid of TABOR, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, is that how they interact makes it really difficult for example, little fire districts. So explain this. How, you know, what is going on with that, Joanne?
Sure. So I want to go back to something that we said very early on, but it's important when we discuss this topic. The Gallagher Amendment, the residential assessment rate, is established through statewide information. We aggregate information from all over the state to determine what our recommendation is going to be to the legislature on the residential assessment rate. As we realize, all property tax is actually local. The state doesn't collect property tax. It's all the various different taxing jurisdictions. And so although that 7.15 represents a statewide level, there are very few places in the state where actually the combination of residential property and all other property would equal that 7.15, if that makes sense.
Okay,
so
got it.
What you have in your rural areas is you have places that either have a lot more residential and not so much commercial in their property tax soup, in their valuation soup, or they might have, and is probably the better word, they have residential property that hasn't grown as much as residential property in other areas of the state, predominantly the Front Range.
And grown in value is what you're meaning,
correct.
Right? Correct.
Grown in value. The residential property hasn't. So the offset between the drop in the residential property value and the increase in residential property actual value doesn't come up to what the drop in the residential assessment rate will cause to their budget. What does this mean simply? It simply means that if they leave the mill levy at exactly what it was the year before, they don't collect as much money for their budget. To raise the mill levy, they have one of two options. Maybe they deprued quite some time ago, which allowed them to keep all of the information, all of the money that they got from their mill levy, or a few had debruced with budget questions saying, let us keep our budget whole, which allows them to raise the mill levy. But when they raise the mill levy, they raise the mill levy, going back to another part of our conversation, they raise the mill levy on all taxable property, which means they raise the mill levy on their businesses as well as raising the mill levy on their residential property, all because of a drop in the residential assessment rate.
Okay, but so because of this, proponents to get rid of Gallagher and Tabor, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, don't indicate that there are options. You had mentioned debrucing or detabering, and it's called debrucing because the architect for Tabor was Douglas Bruce, but it's really called detabering. And there's
it really is a detaber. Correct.
Yeah, and so instead of just getting rid of Tabor and Gallagher on a statewide level, there are things that each little taxing jurisdiction can do. I think you just kind of alluded to that, Joanne.
Yes, each taxing jurisdiction can go out and ask their constituency in a ballot question to adjust their particular circumstances in their district differently. One of the more popular approaches this past election was something that was called de-Gallagherization. Say that fast. but it was really a de-Tabor. It was an election allowed under Tabor. And it's where, but districts all did it differently all over the place. And they asked their constituents, for the most part, to allow them to raise the residential mill levy, although you can't do that. So it allowed them to keep a residential assessment rate that would keep their budget whole. Almost all of them tied it back to their budget to allow their budget to grow in a certain way. Without that time, but you are talking, there are over 3,000 special districts in the state. There are 200 and some odd municipalities, I think close to 300 municipalities, 64 counties. You're talking about a lot of elections. And so those that are proposing a Tabor or Gallagher solution are looking to try and do it more on a statewide basis than have all of these little local elections. But there are ways to take it local.
My concern, Joanne, is that they're using the narrative of these little fire districts or rural Colorado to get rid of Gallagher. In essence, what's going to happen then is you'll start to see your residential property taxes start to increase if we get rid of Gallagher and or Tabor. And so I'm really concerned about that. What's your thoughts?
So now we've crossed over that wonderful bright line for me, which is I don't set policy for the state of Colorado,
okay.
So I don't get to have an opinion there.
Okay. So what else do you think our listeners need to understand about this?
So I think that if your listeners keep in mind that it is a ratio between the contribution of value for residential and all others, as opposed to just it drops because residential value goes up. We get a lot of people that say, wait a minute, my value went up twice as much as you're cutting my residential property assessment. That's not the relationship that matters. The second is that all property tax is local. And when you hear from your local taxing jurisdiction that there's a problem out there, listen, analyze, and vote appropriately based on the information that you're provided. Because this does not affect every taxing jurisdiction in the same way. And we all appreciate the services that are coming from those taxing jurisdictions.
Okay. And and Gallagher, let's go back just a little bit. Gallagher was passed in 1982, right?
Correct. There was a massive rewrite of property tax policy in the Constitution in 1982. What we often refer to as the Gallagher Amendment was actually amendment to that that dealt very specifically with this residential assessment rate piece. There was lots of other stuff in it, but this dealt with the residential assessment rate piece.
And if I remember right, Dennis Gallagher said that one of the reasons that they did this is because that was when there was a bit of a property tax revolt that was occurring out in California. And so our legislature wanted to sit down and try to you know, make sure that it was fair between residential and commercial. Were you around at that time, Joanne? Do you remember that conversation at all?
Well, I was around, but I was actually a cocktail waitress down at Callahan's in Tamarack Square.
Okay.
And I have to admit that I wasn't paying attention to property tax policy so much. Although, interestingly, I did join the legislature. I was elected in 1983 and had the opportunity to vote on lots of the legislation that now haunts me as property tax administrator, that legislation to clean up or set policy. As you know, when there's a constitutional amendment, then there's often legislation that has to go in to enact that constitutional amendment. So, but I didn't actually participate in the conversation regarding this particular amendment.
Okay, and then, so you were in the state legislature for how long?
I was elected to 4 terms back in the 80s. I was very young.
That is major cool. That
I'm
is
teasing.
Major cool.
So I was pretty young. It is cool. It gave me, I've had wonderful opportunities. When you find enjoyment talking property tax at 6:30 in the morning on a Monday morning, you know that you are a special person.
I must say that is for sure. So now let's talk a little bit more then about Tabor, the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights. And basically, what it says is that, like these little fire districts in rural Colorado, if they want to change something, they can actually have an election and do that. That's all it is just basically you have to ask the people. At least that's the way I understand it, Joanne. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are the same. Although, as you've enjoyed in this brief conversation we've had, property tax can be pretty complicated. Trying to put that into a snippet that's easily understood is often a challenge, but local jurisdictions do have the opportunity to go to their voters. Part of the question is, what way should we go to our voters? For instance, mill levy overrides have been happening since before Tabor was enacted and after Tabor became law, and a local taxing jurisdiction might go to their voters and say, please allow us more money to be able to put more fire trucks on the road and add some additional staff. And people say yes. Then the residential assessment rate drops, and all of that gain that was made through that mill levy now is going to what used to be as part of the budget. And so it's apple, horse, cart, chicken, egg, how to anticipate what's going to happen. As you well recognize, usually policy kind of follows as opposed to lead. And that's what you're seeing these small taxing jurisdictions facing right now, is how do we make the request of our constituency so that it can be easily understood and we can provide the services that we want to provide. Sometimes the constituents have the ability to say no, and we don't want that service, or we don't believe you, or we don't want to raise our...
Sure.
So, yeah, and that's fair.
You know, I have to say, Joanne, personally, I like that transparency. And we only have about a minute left. Your last comment, what's the last thing that you would like to leave with our listeners, Joanne Groff, Property Tax Administrator for the state of Colorado?
I would like to leave them with the knowledge that they pay a very fair tax rate, especially if they are a residential property in the state. Lincoln Land Institute did a study. We are the second lowest in the country for residential, about 20th in the country for business property taxes. But we are by far not the highest.
Okay, and one other question. Do other states also have that business personal property tax, or is Colorado somewhat unique in that?
Other states do have it. Tax policy is different almost everywhere, and there's socialization in almost every property tax structure. Ours happens to be the Gallagher Amendment, but in other states, they do other things.
Okay, well, very good. And Joanne, if you can get that list to me of the 11,000 different entities that have gotten... that don't have to pay a property tax, that would be just great. I so appreciate this conversation, particularly on a Monday morning. Thank you so much, Joanne Groff.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And so we're just about out of time. So James Madison said, "It will be of little avail to the people that the laws are made by men of their own choice if the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read or so incoherent that they cannot be understood." Wow. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.